ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Text 6, Chapter 16, Text 20. Upari stava pushuam sam Bhagavatam janadananam Savabhuta guha vasam Vasudevam Jagadgurum Upadistasvapusham Bhagavantam Janarinam Sarabhuta Guhavasam Vasudevam Jagadgurum Upadistasvapusham Pusham Bhagavatam Janaram Janaram Savabhuta Gunasvasam Vasudevam Jagadgurum Ladies, Upati Sasva. Just try to worship Purusham, the Supreme Person, Bhagavantam, the Personality of Godhead, Janardhanam, he who can kill all the enemies, Sarvabhuta Guhavasam, living within the core of the heart of everyone. Vasudevam. Vasudev Krishna, who is the all-pervading son of the son of Vasudev. Jagat Gurum, the spiritual master and teacher of the whole world. Translation. My dear Aditi, engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of everything, who can subdue everyone's enemies, and who sits within everyone's heart. Only a Supreme Person, Krishna or Vasudev, can bestow all auspicious benedictions upon everyone, for he is the Supreme Master of the universe. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. With these words, Kashyapa Muni tried to pacify his wife. Aditi made her appeal to her material husband. Of course, that is nice, but actually a material relative cannot do anything good for anyone. If anything good can be done, it is done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. Therefore, Kashyapa Muni advised his wife Aditi to begin worshiping Lord Vasudev, who is situated in everyone's heart. He is the friend of everyone and is known as Janardana because he can kill all enemies. There are three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And above material nature, transcendental to material nature, is another existence, which is called Shruta Sattva. In the material contamination, even the mode of goodness is sometimes overpowered by the modes of passion and ignorance. But when one transcends the competition between these modes and engages himself in devotional service, he rises above the three modes of material nature. In that transcendental position, one is situated in pure consciousness, Sattvam Visuddham Vasudeva Shabaditam. Above material nature is the position called Vasudeva, or freedom from material contamination. Only in that position can one perceive the Supreme Personality of Supreme Spiritual Necessity. Vasudeva Savamiti Sa Mahatma Sarabaha. When one realizes Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes most exalted. Paramatma Vasudeva is situated in everyone's heart, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says, Tasam Sarata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pritipurvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hiri Deshe Arjuna Tishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. Bhoktaram Jnana Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshvaram Sudaram Sarva Bhutanam Jatva Mam Santim Richati. The sages, knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. Whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudev Krishna, who will give a devotee intelligence to help him surpass all difficulties and return home back to Godhead. Kashyapa Muni advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudev Krishna so that all her problems would be very easily solved. Thus, Kashyapa Muni was an ideal spiritual master. He was not so foolish that he would present himself as an exalted personality as God, as good as God. He was actually a bona fide guru because he advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudev. One who trains his subordinate or disciple to worship Vasudev is truly bona fide spiritual master. The word Jagat Gurum is very important in this regard. Kashyapa Muni did not falsely declare himself to be Jagat Guru, although he actually was Jagat Guru, because he advocated the cause of Vasudev. Actually, Vasudev is Jagat Guru, as clearly stated here, Vasudam Jagat Gurum. One who teaches the instructions of Vasudev, Bhagavad Gita, is as good as Vasudevam Jagat Gurum. But when one does not teach this instruction as it is, declares himself Jagat Guru, he simply cheats the public. Krishna is Jagat Guru, and one who teaches the instruction of Krishna as it is, on behalf of Krishna, may be accepted as Jagat Guru. One who manufactures his own theories cannot be accepted. he becomes Jagat Guru falsely. Om Ajnana Kiranasya Janjana Salakaya Chakshu Umulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Okay, so here we're seeing that Aditi is troubled. She, her sons are gone, and she wants to be with her sons. And Kashyapa Muni, in his compassion and love for Aditi, gives her the instruction to take to the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master or Vasudeva Krishna. So you could all do the same thing. You're all here. You're all, pretty much all of you are just come, all the ones are yellow, there's white ones, there's saffron ones. You're all different times that you've come to Krishna consciousness. You've come to this temple. And so now is the time to surrender. Give up all these false premonitions and false desires that we have. And you have to learn, this is a real important point. You really have to learn how to accept these anarthas, subtle anarthas and gross anarthas, things that we've had in our past, different traumas, different relationships, different illusions, different things that came into our past. We find that they come to our mind when we're chanting our japa. So this is what you do to counteract these negative thoughts, these negative anarthas that come into the mind while you're chanting your japa. You get your consciousness developed to acceptance, realizing that these traumas, these illusions, these negative thoughts come to your mind can easily be blocked. All you simply have to do is acceptance. When the negative comes, you say, how are you today? You look good? Stay out there, let me chant. You don't feed it negative energy. You don't feed it positive energy, because it just grows and grows and grows. And then it manifests into something abominable, and then you're doing something crazy. Isn't it a fact? It's just like that. So you have to develop this acceptance. Acceptance to hearing the Supreme Word, Supreme Lord's words. Acceptance to hearing the chanting. And you have to hear the chanting, and you have to chant. Don't think that I can go on and do devotional service day after day, and not chant your rounds. You got to chant your rounds, because there's nothing else in the material world. I've tried it all. I'm 70 years old, and I've tried everything. Every possible way, every possible means, every possible thing I could do to get out of this material world. By embracing it, by diving into it, by rejecting it, by just putting it all aside. So this is what we have to do when we're chanting our japa. We have to focus on the hearing. We have to focus on each syllable, because each syllable is a song sung to God. And when you chant the Maha Mantra, you become happy and peaceful, isn't it? I mean, really, when you're really serious, I mean, when you really sit down and you really chant around, I mean, really chant around, hearing every syllable, not letting the negatives bother you, or using acceptance, and just focusing on the chanting, you cannot believe how much happiness you will feel, how much happiness you will feel in your mind. Relax. You'll be relaxed. You'll feel peaceful and happy. But it only lasts for a short time, because our minds are so flickering. It's constantly slipping off, slipping into different illusions, dragging us here and there, making us look at this, look at that, desire this, desire that. And it's all useless. Totally useless. Everything in this material world that you think you can enjoy and be happy with is useless. It's not going to give you happiness. I know, I'm 70 years old and I've tried it all, and I got no happiness. And doing the most abominable things, I received no happiness. But I'm receiving more happiness now. This moment, right now, is reality. A minute ago, I cannot change it. I cannot dwell on it. I cannot let that bother my consciousness. Its reality is now, right now, this minute, everything in the past, you can't change it or do anything about it. The future, you don't know because you're not God and you're not on a spiritual platform enough to understand the messages and the nectar that comes to us from Krishna. So, about that, I think I'm going to tell you some Prabhupada stories. Okay, I want to tell you about, I cooked for Prabhupada 3 times here in Juhu. 3 times I cooked for Prabhupada. I'm going to tell you all 3 times. The first time, it was in 1974. I got word from Srila Prabhupada that he wanted me to make samosas for a big program that he was doing. So, me being a puffed-up brahmachari, I had this recipe for 5 vegetable Gujarati samosas. So, I worked it. I mean, for hours, I worked this filling. I just worked and worked and worked and worked until it was perfect. And then I rolled out puris this big. And then I filled them halfway, rolled them over, bing and a bang. I made samosas that big. 32 of them I sent up to Srila Prabhupada. And I was so proud and happy and puffed up. I thought I did the greatest thing. Anyways, 3 or 4 days later, Brahmananda Swami was walking, and I walked up to him, and I said, Brahmananda Swami, did Prabhupada like the samosas? And then Brahmananda Swami said, Prabhupada didn't even touch them. I was totally, what did I do? Why? I couldn't figure it out. So then, maybe an hour or so later, Harikesh, he was a brahmachari, Prabhupada's cook, came up to me and said, how would you like to cook Prabhupada's lunch with me? I said, oh, yes, yes. So as I was going into the kitchen, Prabhupada's kitchen, I had to go through the living room. In the living room, all around the walls, were all these trays with all these different kinds of prasadam, because he was having some VIPs for lunch. And on the side here was a big tray of samosas, but they were the Indian samosas, you know, like that, you know. Anyways, me and Harikesh were in there just having a good old time cooking Prabhupada's lunch. And then Prabhupada walked into the kitchen. We offered our obeisances. And then Prabhupada looked at me. Then he looked at Harikesh. Then he looked at me again. And then he looked at the samosas. And he said, did you make these samosas? I said, oh no, Srila Prabhupada, I didn't make the samosas. There was an Indian cook here earlier. He cooked all these samosas. Then Prabhupada said, quote, you don't know how to make samosas. You only know how to make footballs. And you know you two are expert in messing everything up. And he walked out of the room smiling. So we continued cooking his lunch. And then I got to serve Srila Prabhupada his lunch. It was really nice, you know. It was like the whole thing has changed now. Now I'm serving Prabhupada his lunch. So I brought the tray of food into him, and I put it on the table there, and he didn't talk to me. He just pointed to take the bitter melon, the steamed bitter melon, and mash it with the rice. And that's what he was eating first. And then I brought in the chapatis. And listen to this. I have been cooking since 1973, and I still can't make a chapati puff up like a balloon. That big. I cannot do it. I've tried. I just cannot do it. But anyways, Harikesh could do it. And I would bring in these big chapatis for Prabhupada and serve them his lunch. So that was the second time I cooked for Prabhupada. And then the third time was the next day. He asked me to do it again. So again, I cooked Prabhupada's lunch. And the same thing, I served him his lunch. And those are the 3 times that I actually personally cooked for Srila Prabhupada. So that's very nice. And so, all you would-be cooks, this is my suggestion to you. When you're cooking, you focus. You focus on what you're doing. You do one preparation at a time. I've tried it, you know. Way back in 1975, it was Bhakti Siddhanta's appearance day. and we were going to make 108 preparations for Bhaktisiddhanta. And the reason that all the preparations came out good was because I was focused. I was focused on each preparation, being very particular, making sure I put just the right amount of spice, the right amount of this, the right amount of that, cooking it just the right amount, and then putting it in a bowl and sending it up. Anyways, for this special occasion, I made 98 of the 108 preparations. So Gopal Krishna, he was Grihasthana or Brahmachari, he came walking up to me and he said, "You have made most of these preparations. You must go up and tell Srila Prabhupada what you made." So I went up to Prabhupada's quarters, and Prabhupada was sitting at his dais, and in the front was a table with 108 bowls of preparations. 108 of them all sitting on this big table. So I sat in front of Srila Prabhupada. And so then Srila Prabhupada looked at me, and then he said, "What's this?" I told him what it was, and he ate it. He said, "What's this?" I told him what it was, and he ate it. He said, "What's this?" I told him what it was, and he ate it. He said, "What's this?" I told him what it was, and he ate it. And the fifth time, he said, "What's this?" I told him what it was, and he ate it. And I don't remember what he said, or if he even said anything. But my memory or recollection is that he said that Radharani has prepared this. You can go. That was the blessing that I got from Prabhupada. Anyways, so back to the Bhagavatam. So we have the three modes of material nature to contend with. Most of all of you here are in the mode of goodness, working in the mode of goodness. But working in the mode of goodness really isn't going to get you liberation from the material world, get you free of all the perplexities that this material world offers you. Because the material world offers you everything, doesn't it? Everything you desire, it's out there. And if you don't desire it, they put the desire in your head with a billboard or some newspaper article or something. They put it in your head. So what you have to do is you have to take all that stuff there and just push it aside and dive into this literature. Prabhupada spent countless hours, days, years writing these books for you to read and understand what it is to be a devotee. You know what it is to be a devotee? To be surrendered? I mean, how many times has the temple commander come up to you and say, "Can you do this?" And you give him some excuse. What kind of devotional service is that? For me, if someone asked me to do something, even if I was half dead lying on the ground, I would still go after that devotional service, that seva, because that's what gives us happiness. That's what gives us real happiness. And the fruit of that happiness is peacefulness of the mind. You become peaceful in your mind when you do seva. And seva is chanting, washing your clothes, being clean, cooking, gardening. When you see something laying on the ground, what does it mean? You're chanting Hare Krishna. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, that means you're asking Krishna for service. So you're walking and you see some flowers or some paper or something laying on the temple floor. You just walk by it. Krishna is giving you seva right there in front of you. So what do? You go down and you pick it up and you put it in the proper place. And your mind becomes peaceful for a moment. I mean, I'm not saying that you're going to achieve great happiness for days and days and days and hours and hours and hours. No. You're only going to receive happiness and peacefulness of the mind according to how much you surrender. Whatever it is you surrender, that's what you will get. If you're totally surrendered, then you'll be totally and totally absorbed and happy and peaceful and full of love. You know what it is to have real love, to taste real love, the divine love? Because there's two kinds of love on this material world. One love, you say, "I love you." And what does it lead to? It leads to all kinds of abominable things. All kinds of things manifest when you tell somebody, "I love you." But when you say, I love you to Krishna or to your spiritual master, and you put all your heart and feeling and emotion into it, then you can achieve real love. You can taste the real love that's divine, that is endless. It is endless. Divine love is endless, and it's always coming. Once you're hooked in, Krishna does not let you go. But if you decide you want to go back and enjoy in the material world, well, Krishna will give you the facility somehow or other, or one of the demigods, or someone will give you the facility, but you're not going to get any happiness. It's not going to fulfill your, it's not going to make your heart warm and feel so much compassion. Because I have a lot of compassion for all these souls that are out there. Really, you know. When I see these poor people, you know, are struggling, you know, with one arm because someone cut his arm off so they can beg money, you know. I feel sorry for that soul because he's so conditioned and so programmed to do what he has to do just to get food in his mouth. And, you know, he has no idea about Krishna or understanding about Krishna. This is why food for life is so important. Food for life gives that prasadam, which is spiritual and is connected to this divine love. And when you taste it, and when you bring it into your body, it nourishes you. It does so many wonderful things. It's mystical. Krishna is Yogeshwara, the supreme mystic. No one, no witch, no wizard, no Satan, no demon, no anything can have the mystic power of Yogeshwara, the supreme mystic, because this temple was built by Yogeshwara, the supreme mystic, by our hard work and our hard. We really worked hard to build this temple. You wouldn't believe what we had to go through, the austerities. I lived in the hut when I first got here. You know what? You guys don't know what. You guys got it easy. You got your room. You got AC. You got prasadam every day. Everything is rolling out for you. But when I was here in 1974, we had to go through austerity. I mean, real austerity. We lived in this little shack, little hut, and had a concrete floor which was cracked and falling apart. They had these bamboo or whatever walls going around it and a little roof. But the one thing that I remember mostly about this hut, there was a cobra this big who lived underneath the hut. He was this fat and he had diamonds on him, some kind of special cobra. But the thing is that cobra never bit a devotee, even though he was living right underneath the hut. And then eventually when the snake came out, someone found it and killed it, and that was the end of that one. And then there was one time that I saved Prabhupada's life, if you want to put it in that way. Anyways, I was waiting at Prabhupada's quarters at the entrance when he was coming back from his morning walk, and right beside me on my right was a small square of grass or a few bushes. And in the middle of that bushes was a green viper snake, very poisonous snake. And if Prabhupada was, when he came back from his morning walk, would walk right past that spot, that snake would have bit him. So I had a story about snakes in Hyderabad, so I really didn't want to deal with this snake. So I told the other devotees to get rid of it, you know. But I did that, you know. And there were challenges in living here in Juhu in the early days. There were real challenges. I mean, Prabhupada gave me the instruction to put a flower in every square inch of land in this Juhu property. That was his first instruction to me when I was here. So I almost did that. But it was a struggle. I had to work all kinds of deals and all kinds of things with the tenants so that I could put gardens in their yards. So eventually, after the years had gone by, I had slowly put flowers everywhere in a fruit garden. I was putting flowers everywhere in the buildings, gardens. I was putting flowers. The neighbors were letting me do it, and I almost finished completely putting a flower in every square inch of land around here. But unfortunately, I was kicked out by the police. They came to the temple and said, "You have to go." So what I did is I wrote to every single temple in the world, asking him, I'm Shankar Das. I am a gardener and a cook. Who wants me? Because I had no money. I was a brahmachari. So Hari K said, yes, I will pay your ticket. So after the opening of the temple here, I went to Sweden. But actually back to India. I had some very wonderful experiences with Srila Prabhupada when I was here. And in fact, I was considered probably a very more fortunate than most devotees because I really had a lot. I mean, Prabhupada really, I mean, how many devotees really got the sauce? I mean, really got specific things, you know? Like, I'll tell you this story. In 74, they wanted me to turn on the water pump. Most of you don't know where it was, but it was between the hut and the Gandhi garden. Anyways, they wanted me to turn on this water pump. So, this water pump made lots and lots of noise, really loud noise. So, I went on top of all the roofs of all the buildings, checked all the water tanks, and all the water tanks were full of water. So I'm thinking, I'm a puffed up brahmachari, I got an idea. I am not going to turn on the water pump before Mangal Arati like I was supposed to, but I will turn it on after Mangal Arati so Prabhupada can hear the Mangal Arati. So that happened, the Mangal Arati went on, and after Mangal Arati I turned on the water pump. And then I started to collect my flowers that I give to Prabhupada. And then as I was walking around, Paramahamsa Swami was running up to me. And he says, are you responsible for turning on the water pump? And I said, yes. He says, well, Srila Prabhupada just went to go to the bathroom and there's no water for him to clean himself. And he wants to talk to you right now. So I was I didn't know, I can't remember what my whole consciousness was like, but anyways, I slithered up to Prabhupada's quarters, and then I went into his room. It was a big room, and it was cushions and everything, and Prabhupada was sitting there with some light in the room, and he was closed, his eyes were closed, and he was either doing Gayatri or meditating, and I just sat there looking at him. And then he opened his eyes, and I said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, I made a mistake. And then Prabhupada said, yes, everything you do is a mistake. Get out of here and leave me alone. So I just stood there, what did I do? And then Prabhupada opened his eyes again. He said, you're still here? Get out of here and leave me alone. So I went downstairs. And I started telling the devotees, and they said, you got to kill yourself. You just offended your spiritual master so much. So for the first time in my whole life, I contemplated suicide. I went up on top of the building. I stood up on the edge, and I was ready to jump off and kill myself because I offended my spiritual master so bad. But something, some kind of energy or something, pulled me down, and I just sat and cried and cried and cried and felt so low and so useless that I was just a useless person. So then I gave Girivars the flowers to give to Prabhupada on the morning walk. So when they came back from the morning walk, I asked Girivars, I said, did you give Prabhupada the flowers? And he says, yes, I gave Prabhupada the flowers. And then Prabhupada said, where's my flower boy? So I was Prabhupada's flower boy. The reason was because I always gave Prabhupada a flower. And then sometimes, even when I gave Prabhupada his flower, sometimes he would brush my hand with his lotus hand. And I don't even remember what I felt or how I reacted to the whole thing. Years and years later, I'm realizing, wow, what was my reaction to that, you know? Because that's a real blessing, to be touched by your spiritual master with love. I mean, accepting that flower from me. It's like this story, you know? Ekanath told me this. I always made Prabhupada garlands from the gardens that I was doing here. So I made this small garland. And so it was Guru Puja time, so I went in to put it on Srila Prabhupada, and it wouldn't go over his head. It just lay just like that, above his head, just like that. And Ekanath said, Prabhupada wore it the whole Guru Puja. He just sat there with this around his head like Julius Caesar, you know, just sitting there. And I was really happy with that, you know, that he actually accepted that despite the faultiness of it being too small. And then there's so many exciting things that happened here in Juhu in those days. You know, working in the construction was really a challenge. I mean, it really was. When we were building this temple, it was a challenge. I mean, they were stealing the cement. They were jumping over the walls, and they were stealing everything. We had site coordinators, and they were part of the ripping off. And then there was trying to get cement to put these pillars and this whole temple together. It was a challenge trying to get 1,000 bags of cement. It was a challenge. But we did it. We persevered. And we all were like a family, especially us in the construction office. Our construction crew, we were tight. We were together. And every day, because I cooked too, besides working on the construction, I would bring the maha to the construction crew. So we all had maha every day when I was cooking. So like that, you can understand that this temple wasn't built just like they do all over the place around here. They built so fast and put them together. It took time. It took and patience. And then one thing that I did that I was really, really happy about is I wanted to get cow's milk. I wanted to eat cow's milk. And the milk we were getting from Saraji Maharaj's Goshala was always cut with water, and it wasn't really, really, really nice milk, you know. So, I just lost thought on that one. Anyways, let's get back to the Bhagavatam. I lost my thought on that one. Okay, whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudev or Krishna. So there it is again. Perplexed, when you become perplexed. You have to surrender to it. What are you going to do? Are you going to surrender to your mind? Are you going to let your mind tell you what to do when you become perplexed and bewildered with the material energy? Are you going to let your mind tell you, it's okay, you can smell a BD. You can smoke some ganja. It's all right. But no, that is not the real deal. You know, that is not what the mind really wants to do. Because your mind will help you. Your mind has two facilities: to ruin you and destroy you and do everything against you, or your mind will help you develop Krishna consciousness. So it's just a matter of your consciousness. You have to make the decisions. You have to make all the choices in your life. No one is going to make your choices. Your choices are you. You. Your heart is your heart. And when you open up your heart to Krishna, you cannot believe what will happen. And it's really hard to open up your heart because we don't know. We think that sex pleasure, that the culmination of the result is love and happiness, but it's not, because how long does it last? And then what are the repercussions? What are all the different things that happen because of it? There's so many things. Illegitimate children, all kinds of mental problems, all kinds of things happen from a love that you think is real love, but it's not. Real love is when you open your heart and you see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. You know, they protected me, you know. I have a lot of faith in Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. They protected me. I'll tell one quick story. When I was in Hyderabad, and this is my snake story. When I was in Hyderabad, I was sent there from here. There was a ghat, a washing ghat, where they wash clothes. And inside that ghat, there was a cobra this big, a black cobra. And it was up like this, hissing and spitting out this liquid. And these kids were putting sticks and throwing rocks at it and everything. So I got all the kids away. And then I made a mistake. And don't any of you do this, okay? Don't any of you do this. I went over to the guy. And I looked at this cobra. And then that cobra looked at me. And then eye to eye, we were looking at each other for a long, long time. And the cobra knew I was going to kill him. And I knew the cobra was going to kill me. So I didn't know what to do. So I said, well, I'm going to do it. So I ducked my head. I took two big boulders. And I threw them at the cobra and broke them into three pieces. Then I built a fire. And I put the cobra on the fire, and I burnt them to ashes. And then it rained. And then I thought, wow, I did it. I'm not going to get cursed or anything. I did a perfect jugga. So then I was walking towards my room, and then all of a sudden, I felt the presence of an evil energy, an energy so powerful and strong and horrible. Behind me, I turned around and there was nothing. And then I felt the presence of the cobra. The cobra was behind me, his spirit, or wherever they are when they leave their body or do a mystic curse on you. Anyways, I knew I was going to get hurt. So I went into the deity room. And Gornitai and Prabhupada, I put my bed right beside the altar. Just put it right beside the altar. And I said, you have to protect me. This snake is going to hurt me real bad because I broke him in two places. He's going to break me in two places. Please help me. Please protect me. So I lay there and I fell asleep. And I was on my back like this, laying down. And then he came in. The snake had entered one of the devotees' bodies. This devotee was a Kali worshiper before he came a devotee. So his consciousness, his psyche, was really, really ready to accept this snake, this serpent spirit. So the serpent entered this person's body, and then he walked into the deity room. And then he seen me laying there. And then he had a brand new machete. A brand new one. And he went over my head like this and whomp! He tried to cut my head off, and the axe stuck right there. You see that scar there? And if it was just an eighth of an inch more, my head would have been off. But Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Srila Prabhupada protected me. You know why? So I could give this Bhagavatam class now. That's why. Otherwise, why else would I be alive? You know? Why else would I be giving this Bhagavatam class unless Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and Prabhupada had given me a special protection to let me live my life to 70 now. I'm 70 years old, and I can say I've really, really am very happy that I see so many nice devotees now, that you're all engaged and doing service. You're getting nice prasadam. You're all happy. You're very enthusiastic in the kirtans. I watch everything and hear everything. And I just see that you're all really totally absorbing yourself in the seva of Krishna consciousness in this Juhu temple. And I thank you all for being here and making it all happen, because without you, this whole thing would not happen. This whole temple would not function and go on without your participation and you doing your seva and your part. Because you all have a part, and that part could just be chanting your rounds every day. Could be your part. But everyone has a part. So I'm going to end here, unless you want me to tell another story, and we'll ask for questions and comments.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your inspiring class. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami says, the moment you see a poisonous snake, if you kill, there is no sin. That is my comment.
Yeah.
And second thing, I was part of Prabhupada Leelamrita, which is called Biographic Gem. I had interaction with many Prabhupada's disciples. And in fact, I just tried to interview some of the Prabhupada's disciples, which I was given the hints. I wish I could interview you for becoming part of the Lilamrita, but anyway, you are part of the family. So thank you very much. And then second thing, since you cook, you have been cooking, but still I saw you in Alachua, you have been cooking also, and your preps are coming very nice. I have relished that prasadam. And then since you served Srila Prabhupada, you got the nice comments from Srila Prabhupada, which is mercy also, being chastised, being praised, and so forth. My question is, have you ever got a chance to get some kind of realization or some reciprocation that you have been cooking to please Krishna? That's my question.
A book? What did you say? Oh, reciprocation.
Yeah.
Well, the reciprocation it's simple. When you're a cook, I'm just telling you as a cook, when you're cooking and when you're putting the spices, you know, your focus is on the amount, you know. I've been cooking for so long, 43 years, you know, and when you put, you know, the right amount of spices and everything. And then the reciprocation is, when I go to the temple in Alachua and I cook for 350 to 500 devotees, the reciprocation is when I walk into that pavilion, everybody, I don't mean that, not everybody, talking, laughing, going crazy, eating prasadam, just going.
That give him a good hand. Haribol.
That is the reciprocation that Krishna gives you when you dive into seva. He gives you what he does, and that is to make everybody happy and peaceful in their minds.
The reason I'm saying just when Srila Prabhupada, you know, there is one devotee in Australia, his name is Kurmadas.
Yeah.
Everybody knows he's famous for his cooking, because he has a cookbook, and then when prasadam was brought to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada took one bite of his preparation, and then he started looking just behind, and then he said, who cooked this? Then Kurma was standing just behind Prabhupada, because he was watching how Prabhupada eats, because he worked very hard to please him. So Kurma said, yes, I did, Srila Prabhupada, very softly. Then Prabhupada said, just Prabhupada turned his face towards him, and then he said, I'm sure you must be following four regulative principles. So then Kurma was very, very soft, and just his head was down. And Prabhupada loved his preparations, whatever he cooked over there. And I ate his preparations, not only in Australia, but also in Vrindavan. And then it is really fantastic. But I'm sure, just to know what you are cooking, just devotees are releasing, which I did also. And thank you very much.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Okay, so I got 5 minutes. A story just came into my head. I'm going to tell one more Prabhupada story, then I'm going to end. This is when Prabhupada asked me, when I asked him if I should do a fruit garden, I made a fruit garden for Prabhupada. In the back, in the building over in the corner, right behind his building, I made a fruit garden. I was growing sitafal, we had chiku, we had guava, we had papaya, and we had strawberry bananas that I planted. So, Prabhupada was going to Europe or going around the world or something, but he was at the Bombay airport. So, I had this big stalk of bananas. There must have been 100 bananas on the stalk. I cut it, and it was all ripe, and I brought it to the airport. So I walked into the airport after I got through customs and everything, and Prabhupada was sitting in a chair with the devotees around him and sitting on the floor all around him. And then I walked right up to Srila Prabhupada with this big stalk of bananas. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, would you like a banana? And Prabhupada said, did you grow these? I said, yes. Immediately he grabbed one. He peeled it, and he ate the whole banana. And then he said, pass them out to everybody. So I went all over the Bombay airport, passing out prasadam bananas. And Hari K, seeing this opportunity to preach, jumped up on a table and started preaching to all the people who were honoring these bananas. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. God.